My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them, and I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I'm sending you all so much love wherever you are, and I pray that you're surrounded by people, situations, connections, and settings that give you the love, provision, protection that you deserve, and that most of all, you are learning how to give that to yourself. So you can probably see by the title of today's episode, we are talking about the fear of being seen. And so we are talking about the trauma that comes into play when we do a lot to avoid being perceived by others, where it feels threatening to have folks pay attention to us. It feels very vulnerable. It feels very exposing and also very dangerous to us. And it's very hard to balance having this as a traumatic response when you also so desperately want to be loved, when you so desperately want to be in community, to be in connection, to be in partnership, but also there's these conflicting thoughts and feelings around, is it safe for other people to truly see who I am? Would they even want me if they saw me? What if I step out and I start to get attention and all of my deepest fears about my worth and what I deserve and everything else proves to be true? What if I get left at the end? What if I've never been good enough? And so I'm kind of getting into a few of the thoughts that happen for those of us who have the fear of being seen. After the jump, I'm going to talk about what this looks like. I'm going to be talking about the trauma patterns that this comes from and also how it affects us in our relationships. So with this being a trauma-focused episode, I usually try to point y'all to a resource that we have here to help with the trauma focus, to help with whatever the topic of the week is. And when I was thinking about this, I was like, you know, the recovery school, of course, we talk about trauma by way of improving our relationships. But when I think about the deep community healing, the tears that need to be shed, the depth that going through this type of trauma really requires, I was like, that really happens more in community. And so I'm really pleased to share, and I'm going to share more details at the end, that we will be having our next Healed and Loved Woman Retreat. For those of you who have been emailing me and DMing me and tagging me and commenting. Yes, we will finally be having our next Healed and Loved Woman Retreat next year. I'll be sharing more about the dates and the time and all that and what we currently have planned and how to be signed up for our waitlist to be able to be in attendance. But again, we're going to talk about that more at the end. If you relate to this fear of being seen, of having some deep wounds that makes it very hard for you to show up, to take up space, that fear of rejection and abandonment, maybe extreme perfectionism by way of trying to make yourself be good enough and be worthy of praise and attention, but never actually hitting that mark because of the deep wounding that you have inside of you and not knowing how to get out of it, not knowing how to get out of this fear of being vulnerable and exposed, even in the most intimate and healthiest of relationships, then this episode is for you. So let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
If you are into the magic of cycle syncing, then you know that the week before you start your period can be vicious. It's the time when your emotions are so off and you're more prone to feeling down, unexpected cravings, and just feeling so uncomfortable in your own skin. If you can relate to any of these experiences, Hormone Harmony's Estrogen Control may be just the product for you to help you manage symptoms of PMS. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, that make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. And the biggest benefit, quote, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews, and there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code BGH at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code BGH for 15% off today.
All right, y'all. So let's talk about it. Let's go ahead and talk about jump in by starting with some of the common thoughts and actions and patterns that happen whenever you have a fear of being seen. So I already said a few times in the intro about this feeling of not feeling good enough, not ever feeling as if you are at a place where you feel worthy and deserving and full and the place that you can fully accept yourself. So sometimes this feeling of not feeling good enough is very clear and apparent. You can see by way of maybe you are very aware of self-loathing. Maybe you're very aware of your insecurities. Maybe you're very aware of where you're wounded and where you try to hide and where you feel not good enough. That is very common, but it is also very common that there is a more high-functioning presentation of having really low self-worth. And that can look like those of us who are addicted to this personal development and self-healing, this self-help journey. Constantly looking for one more thing, one more weakness, one more place that we can grow and stretch ourselves. And because we have this really beautiful term, this very positively connotated term, like personal development, and we use words like being self-accountable, and we use words like being open and being on your healing journey, and all these things are very beautiful and flowery. And they are really great things for us to incorporate and have as tenets in our life. However, if it's being spurred by this belief that where I am today, how I'm showing up today, I am not as valuable as I could be if I had X amount of qualities, X amount of certifications, X amount of people who had eyes on me, if I had whatever it is that I feel like I really want and need and that I'm aspiring to, then I would be worth more in this world. Then I would be more worthy and more valuable. When we get into those places, that's where we shift from being someone who's doing this just because I love myself and I just want to give myself the best experience in this world to I don't like myself and these are the things that I don't like. So let me try to cross out all these things that I don't like. So maybe hopefully I can start to like myself more. I may not be the best person when it comes to communicating when I'm angry. I know that I'm deserving of being angry. I know that my feelings are valid. I am not ashamed of my anger, but I just want to be at a better place to communicate what it is that I need so that it's more functional for myself and for others. But I'm not ashamed of when I get angry and maybe I'm more assertive than maybe others are because I deserve to have my feelings. Versus, I absolutely hate the fact that I get so angry and I'm so ashamed of myself and I can't believe anyone would even want to talk to me and I can't believe that anyone would ever want to be around me and this is exactly how my dad was and this is exactly how my mom was and I'm just going to end up being alone and bitter just like they were and I bet no one likes me. So the second one is we're projecting things onto ourselves. Both of these examples are being self-accountable. Both of these examples are being fully aware of how what might be a growth area for them is negatively affecting different areas of their life. And they both want to improve it, but the energy around it is different. And so when we're coming from a place of lack and a place of wounding and our own self-rejection, this personal development journey actually has no end. And even if we meet the goals, we can't feel it in our body. We can't congratulate ourselves. We can't celebrate the milestones that we have had. We can't ever feel the rest. We don't actually get closer to that place of self-acceptance that we thought we would. If anything, we might critique our journey a little bit more. We might move on to the next thing that we may feel like we need. We'll continually be clouded by our own feelings of self-rejection. I'm going to be talking in a minute about where the different traumas that lead into that. But right now we are still on some of the symptoms of what that looks like. Another example is, well, let me actually go to the one that's most closely related to that, which is perfectionism. So again, this is a highly, highly functioning way that we can hide our feelings of low self-worth by way of becoming very independent, very functional, producing tangible results to show people how good we are and things that are very centered on maybe the global good or what other people consider to be the global good, what the global population considers to be successful, considers to be beautiful, considers to be accepting, is very much focused on what the society as a whole considers to be perfectionism versus what you actually want, because that is where your sense of safety lies. Because if you are spotted, if you are seen, you have to make sure that when people see you, that they don't really have anything to say bad about you. You are exempt from criticism. that you are exempt from being rejected and abandoned. This absolutely leads into the third symptom, which is people pleasing. So doing everything you can to appease the people around you, again, to make sure that you are safe from criticism, rejection, abandonment, and all the things that go along with that judgment. Because you don't feel good enough, you may downplay when you are doing really good things for yourself. So any successes that you may have, any achievements you may have, you may be self-deprecating. You might only tell parts of the good things that you do and only tell parts of the different milestones that you've made when you're talking to other people. It may be common for when you are introducing yourself around people who know you to new folks that the people around you chime in and say, well, girl, you do this too. And you forgot this detail about that. And they're like bigging you up. If you've worked on the ability to accept compliments, you may be better at saying thank you, but it also kind of feels good that other people see you and they're seeing good things about you. They're saying good things about you in addition to seeing the good things about you. And it feels very, very affirming. But would you and could you do that for yourself and do it and say it with your whole chest and own it and let it linger and not end your list of accomplishments and everything that you bring into the world with, but, you know, a lot of people helped me with it, or, you know, but it took me a long time to get there, or, you know, but I'm not perfect. I'm still learning. Do you have to dampen how amazing you are in order to, one, make sure that you're not taking up too much space, two, to kind of get ahead of the game to make sure other people aren't going to criticize you or find a flaw in you? So I'm going to be self-deprecating so that you cannot deprecate me. Or are you truly just not thinking that your accomplishments are that good? Like, okay, you have a degree from Columbia. You have a master's degree from Columbia, but it's not until you get into that PhD program at Harvard that it's actually going to mean something. It has to be in the top Ivy Leagues for you to actually matter. But then even when you get there, do you actually feel good enough to share those accomplishments? And now the rooms that you're in, the people that you're around, do you still feel like you need to gain more accolades or more experiences or more fellowships or more whatever it may be for you to actually feel as if you're worthy to being bragged on? And you'll never reach those limits because the self-abandonment starts from within, which is the next qualifier of this, the self-abandonment. How often do you actually focus on yourself, take care of yourself, prioritize your own feelings and needs across the needs of others? Because when you are in relationships and relationships that you want to keep or in situations that you want to keep, you're afraid of scaring people off. You're scared of being too big. You're scared of being too much. You're scared of being too selfish and your feelings, your needs being just frivolous or unnecessary. And you've learned to go without. So you will self-abandon your own needs, not even identify them, compromise with them even before the words come out of your mouth and shortcut what you are actually going to be asking for or demanding of someone. And you really put yourself last to prioritize the needs and the comfort of other people. You may have a very loud inner critic that is constantly reminding you of when you've done something wrong or when you're not, again, have not shown up in a way that's good enough. The way that you can kind of spot this in your inner dialogue too is when you recount your day, do you list out all the great things you did that day that you're proud of, or which list is longer, the things that you did well that you're proud of or the things that you could have grown in? And how would you feel to not even have a list of things that you could grow in for 3 to 5 days? What would that feel like for you to only celebrate and praise yourself? What fear comes up there? What discomfort? What does that mean? You know, I can imagine that some of you are afraid, well, no, that means I would become narcissistic or that's too egotistical, because to like yourself, to be proud of yourself is very safe for it to just be out there in the open. It has to come very quickly, the thoughts to bring you down a peg, to keep you close to earth. Don't get too excited about yourself. Don't get too proud of yourself. Hold on. Let's be realistic here. You ain't all that. You may have done X, Y, Z that was well. You may have done it for a little bit, but hey, don't get carried away, right? So that inner critic is always going and always in charge. She is great at leading you towards this perfectionism, keeping you very humble. You know, humble is not the same as self-loathing. Humble is a quiet confidence. Humble is quiet because they are so self-assured and so pleased and so grateful and so secure in themselves, because their inner dialogue, that inner script, those voices in their head are already good enough with praising them for who they are and what they've done. they're very clear on who they are, and they're very clear on what they bring into the world, and they're very clear on their purpose, and they're very clear on what makes them happy, and they're very clear on what they need and what they don't need and what's going to make them feel comfortable. And they walk in that. They walk in that security and strength. And so the need not to brag or be in attention is not based in, well, I don't really want to share this because I don't really deserve to take on the spotlight. It's just more they don't need it because they're able to affirm themselves. Some of us think that we are humble and we don't praise ourselves and we don't take up space and we don't actually brag on who we are and we don't express who we are with pride because we're secretly ashamed of ourselves. Because we're secretly believing that we actually don't deserve the affirmation and validation, that we don't deserve for people to see us as a role model or inspiration. There's the undeserving quality is what's underneath fake humility that's closer to the self-deprecation, that's closer to the self-loathing, that's closer to the self-rejection. The last symptoms that I'll share when it comes to the fear of being seen are related to vulnerability and your connections with others. If you have any difficulty sharing your emotions and thoughts and feelings with people, again, this fear of if people actually see me, know me, get to have access to me, what are they going to do with that information? Are they going to criticize it? Are they going to make fun of it? Are they going to like it? We're doing really good right now. We're really getting along right now. And I've given them the mask or enough information about me that's going to keep them around. What if I really start to let loose and to lose my filter or to do exactly what I want to say and do, and then they are gone? Or even if I'm not even afraid that they're going to be gone, which usually there is, if it's a person or a situation or a place that you care about, you want to keep them around. That's where the people pleasing comes in at. But sometimes it's not even about feeling rejected or abandoned by folks. It's more about the criticism, that the criticism is deeply, deeply painful to you. So with that said, let's go ahead and talk about the trauma that leads to this fear of being seen. And so let's start from the top. If you've had any childhood trauma where you were highly punished and criticized for being who you are and for showing up, maybe it looks like very high expectations. Maybe it looked like even when you met the high expectations that insults came very quickly and very often. Maybe the goalposts were moved often, especially in narcissistic relationships. So this fear of being seen with all the qualities that I've already described helps you by staying out of harm's way, staying out of the limelight where folks cannot come in to criticize you. You're going to get them before they get you. And the way you get them is you're not giving them nothing to work with. The little bits that you choose to curate to share with them have been perfectly selected. They are on the outside, soft enough to seem like it's something real, but really you have enough armor underneath to make sure that they can't really get to your soft spots. And even if they are close enough to get to your soft spots, remember, you're not actually sharing all these other things with them. So it is very hard for you to let folks in due to this prior criticism. You don't know what it's like to have people truly enjoy you and like you, and or that the criticism that folks give does not equate to, I really just don't like you and I wish you weren't here and you're a burden. You know, criticism, the concept of constructive criticism, that folks are doing things to actually, or they're saying things that are actually coming from a place of love, is foreign because people may have said that to you. I'm saying this to you because I love you and I want you to be better. But they also act like they just don't like you as a person. And so now when people give you what may be constructive criticism because they believe in who you are and what you're doing, and they see that there's some way that this could be better, it has been coupled for you in your past that anytime someone tells me something negative, it also means that they wish I wasn't around or they wish that I was different or whatever it may be. Okay. The second type of trauma that comes with this is emotional neglect and invalidation. There's a whole episode that talks a lot about childhood emotional neglect here on the podcast. You can have parents who really loved you, and then you can have parents that it was very clear that they were projecting a lot of their brokenness onto you and were not very loving towards you. But if you were in a situation where your emotional needs were not catered to, attended to, valued, celebrated, protected, then you learned that your emotions and that your needs are either not necessary or I shouldn't even expect other people to care for it because they have their own stuff going on. or is this is too much of an ask, or I'm selfish for needing this, or it's better just to keep it to myself anyways, right? Any type of exclusion trauma also leads to this fear of being seen. So again, anything that's related to just who you are as a person and how you show up is not good enough. And this will lead us to self-isolating sometimes and self-selecting to not be a part of the group or to be on the outskirts. Or when we come in again, to give enough of a mask in order to make sure that we are exempt from the possibility of being called out, exempt from the possibility of, because we're rocking the boat so much by being who we are, the possibility of being criticized, rejected, abandoned, and all those other things. And there's some other family traumas and dynamics that we can get into, but that is a very good start for now. These are all things that lead into our fear of being seen. The way that this affects us in relationships, especially by way of love addiction, love avoidance, and love deprivation, which are the intimacy disorders that I talk about here on the podcast. For anyone who was just searching for this topic, the fear of being seen, or saw the title Black Girls Heal, and this is your first time joining me, I talk about healing by way of relationships, primarily by healing from the symptoms of love addiction, love avoidance, and love deprivation. And so I'm not going to get into the full definitions of all three of those today because we have lots of episodes where I talk about that. If you want to learn more, just scan the archive and look at it. But basically, these are persistent patterns where we will hide in relationships, where we will either overattach or underattach. And no matter how much we try to logically change the patterns to be positive, to do something different, we are unable to, even when it impacts us mentally, emotionally, financially, sexually, spiritually, we will continue to put ourselves in dangerous situations in those ways. And so this podcast is all about learning how to heal from the trauma that causes those patterns and how this shows up in our relationships and learning how to do something new and different. And so the programs that we have here takes women on deeper dives to literally break all those patterns and change their lives.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors.
Who remembers watching The Fresh Prince growing up? I don't know about you, but Monday nights, my family was always tuned in. To be able to watch an accomplished Black family that balanced culture, art, humor, and togetherness was so inspiring and healing. And watching Will, Carlton, Ashley, Hillary, and even Aunt Viv during her infamous dance sequence go through so many coming-of-age moments as they discovered themselves and what was most important to them absolutely helped me have confidence to fully embody who I am. Cultural figures and moments like this are so important for us to continue to talk about, review, and celebrate as Black people. And if you're interested in learning more about these types of stories, you have to check out NPR Podcast. NPR has a new collection of podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy and resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Each episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black experience. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Michelle Obama to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, there's no limit to the range of NPR. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR wherever you get your podcasts. For this episode of Black Girls Heal, we've partnered with eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. The people who truly get us on a soul level are priceless. They're the ones you can have the most ridiculous inside jokes with, who get what you're feeling, what you need on a bad day, and are the first people you think of when you have some free time and want to spend it with company. To find these people, you have to be compatible. And compatibility involves so much more than just sharing the same interests in music and film. You have to connect to those who have the same values, complement your temperament, and want the same things in the world. That's why we've partnered with eHarmony. Their compatibility quiz helps your personality come out more in your profile, which makes all other profiles on eHarmony way more interesting and easier to find a match and more fun to read. They want you to find someone who gets you, so give eHarmony a shot. Get started with their compatibility quiz so that you can find someone you can be yourself with. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today. So when I was thinking about this part of the episode and trying to break down how it shows up specifically in each three of these, I could come up with a couple points for several of them, but really they overlap. So I'm just going to share them all and just know that you can identify with any of the three intimacy disorders or all of them. And you will probably be like, yeah, if you've gone to this part of the episode and it's resonating with you. So I'll probably still say a few intimacy disorders, but again, just know that it's not exclusive to that one. And you could probably just exchange it with another one of them and it will still fit. So for my love addicts, we are going to become the chameleons. This is where we learn very well how to become needless and wantless. Literally, we learn how to hide in the cut. We learn how to hide in plain sight, of being exactly who someone wants us to be. Being the good daughter, the good cousin, the good grandchild, the good girlfriend, the good wife, the good sister, the good person in the congregation, the good teacher, the best employee, whatever is the perfect archetype of whatever group you're in, you learn very well how to adopt all the actions and thoughts and mannerisms around them and just kind of step into that, and that becomes your second skin. This is a very great place for you to hide, because it gets to be a role that you get to perfect and you get to act in. The problem is, these types of roles that we learn how to play, they are only really good for places and for situations that want someone there to just be a placeholder or just to be a tool. And so when we do these types of things as our main way of interacting with people, we are not showing up as our real selves, which means that we can only attach to people who are looking for this shell of a person, which are typically folks who are avoidant, either avoidant or a narcissist. They're looking for someone to just come and pop into place and kind of serve a role, but not really require that much more from them. You're not even really in touch with what you need and what you want, or you learn by experience, if I play the game, not only will I be safe, but sometimes they will throw me a bone of attention, of connection, of gifts, maybe money, maybe some sex, maybe some affection. And so your plan is, if I just do all the right things and be the right person and stay on track, then it's all going to work out in the end. They are going to want me more. They are going to want to get to know me more, and I'm going to be swept away and fully feel safe. But that doesn't happen, because when we are hiding, we are only attracting people who see the parts that we show. And the people who are healthy and want to get to know us are absolutely going to be the ones that are pressing us about, wait, what are you feeling? What are you thinking? We only talk about me. What is it that you want? What's going on with you? They're going to ask you how you feel and what you think. And when you shut down, they're going to be upset about it. And because they care about you as a person, versus an avoidant or a narcissist is happy because of the break. Right. Great. Just stop asking about it. They're going to say whatever they need to say just to shut you up, but they're actually not going to put in the work and stuff. So going back to you in the relationship, if you have a fear of being seen as a love addict, then you are going to hide in plain sight and not really show up and ask for what you need. All of the intimacy disorders, that deep fear of abandonment and rejection and being hurt, shows up just depending on where you are in each of them. It may show up differently and in your way of controlling. So the love addict controls by playing this role and hiding who she is, because a love addict a lot of times feels so disempowered in the relationship. And this other person is the one that's deciding how much to share and when they're going and when they're staying and whether or not they're faithful and how much emotions they're going to have. And it feels as if the other person has more power. So it's very hard to lead into this thought that you're being controlling as a love addict, because you have this person who's kind of running around on you in all these ways. But when you are trying to control somebody else, then that is a form of manipulation. Now, it may not be working out the way that you want it to, which is why it's so much more important for you to focus on yourself and who you are and what you want and what your standards and boundaries are, instead of trying to change others. But the control is also about you trying to feel safe, learning how to feel safe in a very unsafe situation with this person that you really want to commit to you, choose you, and change for you, but they're not. So this is your way of finding some control. My love avoidance, we find control by not letting nobody know nothing about me, right? Like you get to know what I get to tell you, when I decide to tell you, how I want to tell you, and you're not going to push me to say anymore. If you are an avoidant, that is a very high functioning. Perfectionism is also how we control, and we make sure we limit what people can say about us and the information that they get to have about us. It's also how we are able to try to improve this nagging feeling that there's something missing or there may be something wrong by becoming more accomplished, becoming more rich, by becoming more according to whatever standard of beauty is happening in the place that you are, or according to the people that you're attracted to, living up to whatever that standard. Like, we try to find control by being in control of all those other places, but we can't outrun this fear that we may not be enough. my ladies who are love deprived, you're very much aware of the fact that you don't want to be seen because you're very much aware that you don't like yourself. My love avoidance, it may take us a while to figure out that we actually don't like parts of ourselves until we maybe get heartbroken. And then all that stuff starts to come up before we find another way to self-medicate and hide from it again, or to say, well, I didn't want them anyways, and put that wall up until the next heartbreak, until the next thing comes up. But for those of us who are love deprived, we are very much aware that we feel like we don't deserve to be in a space or to be seen, or that the other person next to us is better than us. We are intimately in connection with our loud inner critic. We do not try to silence them because we believe them. And the social anxiety is very, very real. I know for me, when I think about how my love avoidance and my love deprivation have overlapped when it comes to this last point about hiding in plain sight and social anxiety and stuff, I learned as a very high functioning child with the trauma set I've already listed, I learned how to disassociate when I am in social settings. So I have chosen a path in life where I am with people. I am in front of people. I do talk to people. I am a social person. I do like to have fun. I am goofy and silly, but all of the other woundings around whether or not I'm deserving have been things that I've had to work on for a long time. And so I know for sure that one way that I learned how to cope for a very long time was, I'm going to be talking to you. I'm using words and I'm listening to you. My body is physically here, but I'm not here. My mind is here, but my body is someplace else. I'm kind of floating here. I'm saying the things, I'm cracking the jokes when I need to crack them. I'm asking you questions about yourself. I'm giving you all this information, but I am not present. This representative is present, but I am not here. I don't know where I am, but I am not here. And so anyone who has a pattern of disassociation knows exactly what I mean when I describe that. And that is a very great way to keep yourself safe, to learn how to not be susceptible to all the ways that you may be in a situation, kind of reading what all the triggers are. Is this person really enjoying what I'm saying? Are they about to leave the conversation? Am I getting on their nerves? Am I keeping them entertained? Do they feel good? Do they feel cared for? Instead of you being able to be in touch with what you need. To be in touch with what you need, while you may not even know how to do it. You for sure don't know how to do that when someone else's eyes are on you because you're trying to read and interpret what they may be thinking about you so that you can be aware of any danger or trauma that may come if you take your eyes off of it. So all of this goes really deep. And I think it's one of the types of trauma that we don't really hear that much about when we hear folks talk about trauma. We hear more about maybe codependency, and we may hear more about fear of using your voice or things like that. But this fear of being seen, if you relate to this, this probably covers so much, so much of what has made it very hard for you to connect to other people, to push past your own fears and limitations. It's probably why it's been very hard for you to put into words what it is that you've been feeling and why you've been feeling it, because it feels so distinct. Like it has so many connections to so many other types of trauma, but it also feels very distinct. It's also one that is so shame-based that even saying out loud you have a fear of being seen, the automatic response from folks who can't relate to this, and this is not a roadblock for them, is the just do it thing. Like, oh yeah, well, if you have a fear of being seen, you just got to get out there. You just got to just take up space. And they don't understand, because being seen brings up the exact intensity of pain that happened when you were a little girl and you were seen. So the same amount of pain that you felt when you were 4, 5, 6, whatever, 2, when a parent looked at you with so much disgust, when people literally pushed you out the way, when you got beat into oblivion for saying something that you didn't even know was going to be an issue, when you were consistently criticized to the point that you just stopped talking, or to where you were talking, but you became that shell of a person to just give people what they wanted, to not have to feel that deep sense of rejection, was not as simple as just do it. And so admitting that this is hard for you is like a double jeopardy, right? It's a double whammy, because out of all of the ways that trauma affects us, and maybe this is why we don't hear about it enough, the fear of being seen and the hiding, it feels like to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like to me is one of the ones that kind of has the most disdain around it. that when people talk about it, it's kind of like, I can't believe that she is doing that. I can't believe that she's not taking up space. I can't believe that she's letting people say this to her. I can't believe that you're all of this, whatever this is for you, that you're as beautiful as you are, that you're as talented as you are, that you're as wealthy as you are, that you are as accomplished as you are, that you are whatever. You've written X amount of books. You've started 8 million businesses. You've been teacher of the year 4 years in a row. I can't believe that you, with everything you got going on, that you still don't want to be in the spotlight, or you still can't claim how great you are. And so now you're being shamed for you feeling ashamed. And how is that supposed to help you get out of this stuff, right? So like I said, this stuff is so tender and it goes so deep, and it's exactly the things that we need to be working on. And so the way that we work on this is by our own inner child work. So the feelings and the thoughts that come up when we are having these thoughts and feelings and emotions, learning how to talk to this inner little girl that has been shamed into hiding and is afraid to show up, building a relationship with her and learning how to speak with her with kindness and accept her and move forward. And this is the work that it takes the time and the space to work through. This is the type of work that we have to continue to grow in and go deeper in and build new habits around. It's more of the long-term work. It's the work that's pretty hard. My fear of being seen, I was not even aware of it until someone else pointed it out, because I was so high functioning in all these other areas. And I had all these other different ways that my trauma showed up. But having someone point this out was the first step. But then also, even once I had the name of it, because it was so wrapped up in all the ways that I showed up in the world, I couldn't tell when I was operating out of my fear of being seen versus overthinking or being overly cautious, or just maybe it's just my personality. Maybe this has nothing to do with trauma. Maybe this is just who I am. And so being in community, working with folks, working with experts has been the way that I've been able to see what my blind spots are and see what my gaps are. Even though I do this for a living and I feel like I'm very good. See, I did it right there, girl. I am very good. I am very good at identifying the trauma patterns and the roadblocks and the issues and getting right down to the root with people within just the first 30 minutes of me talking with them about what's going on. That is something that I'm very good at and talented in. But turning that back onto myself has been something that I've needed to have support and guidance to work through. And so I'm saying this to you because I really want y'all to make sure that when it comes to your trauma patterns and then when it comes to the things that you're working on, to not get stuck in this I will do it myself mentality, the fear of being seen, the fear of being shamed. That's why I really encourage you to talk with people and experts and folks who are talking about the things you need to work on, with people who have gone through it and come through on the other side, or with people who are safe. With people who are not going to get tired of when you keep coming to them and saying, you know, this is another job opportunity that I have, but I'm afraid to go out for it because I am feeling these things, that they're going to be patient. And yeah, they may give you a little bit of tough love, but it's not going to come from a place of criticism and like, girl, I'm tired of hearing about this. You need to be in those spaces with folks who get it. So like I said, as promised, the Heal the Love Woman Retreat is one of those places that I've curated to be a safe space for us to work through our trauma patterns. So for anyone who's ever come before, or anyone who's not come before, the way that our Heal the Love Woman Retreat weekends work is that we typically have 3 sessions that are curated to the needs of the women who are in attendance. We absolutely go over relationship issues and how it may show up in our families and in our friendships and in our romantic relationships. But really at its core, I call this weekend the Healed and Love Woman Weekend versus the Relationship Weekend or the Love Addiction Healing Retreat or whatever it may be, because we want to make sure that you are being healed from the inside out and that what you learn there, that you're going to take it past the weekend to grow, to learn, to go deeper, and to really catapult you into your next stage and your next chapter. The retreat, its curation, has intentionally been a very small experience. So I've never accepted more than 8 women at a time to be at a retreat so that we can really build sisterhood, build connection, and go deeper. Now, I am, for the first time, going to open up the registration limit to have more women be in attendance because I know so many women have wanted to come. And especially with this being annual-ish, this year I'm not having a retreat. And so especially knowing that due to the amount of time and effort that comes into having these retreats, that they do not happen as often, I want to make sure that when we have the experience, that as many women who are ready to come can come. And with that, we will be, this is my first time announcing it, but the retreat will not be until next spring to give women enough time to plan whether or not it's their travel, whether or not it is the expenses of it, to allow more time for us to have longer extended payment plans for those who would like to attend leading up to the event, and just for more folks to learn about it so that it's not something that like, wow, that's exactly what I needed, and then they find out about it a month or so before. And also, as far as the location, so for sure, it will be in Houston, Texas, which is where I am based next year, which is an international airport so that every single person, wherever they are, can come. But I am currently talking with some folks about potentially having this internationally. And I'm looking at, I'm not going to tell y'all where I'm looking at. Just let that be a surprise. So if that can happen when the door is open for registration, then you will have two options to choose from, to either come here to Houston, Texas, or to fly to our second destination for us to have our time together. So I am very excited about it. This weekend is curated not only for us to heal from trauma together and things that work through us and to leave with hope and rejuvenation, but also to build sisterhood, which is the other reason why I've always kept the cohorts very small, to make sure that we had enough time to hear each other's stories, to cry, to laugh, to line dance, to like do all the things that we've done over these last retreats, you know, from, and I'm going to try not to cry right now, but just had some of the most beautiful experiences, from dinners on the beach to doing the latest Beyonce dance and bars downtown as an after party celebration, to just women praying over each other, women just open hearted crying and admitting things they've never been able to share before, and a safe space with other women who get it from around the world, who may be different ages or from different backgrounds. You know, someone's Caribbean and someone's African and someone's from Mississippi, you know, different ages, but just to see the magic that happens in that room. It's stressful for me because I'm not typically an event person, like when it comes to planning. But when I'm there, when I see what happens, it's always more than worth it. And so I'm very excited to open this up for any and all women who would like to attend. So the way that you can attend is by going to blackgirlsheal.org/retreats or blackgirlsheal.org/retreat. Either one is going to get you to the right place. They're going to redirect you to the right place. And go ahead and sign up. So at the time that I'm recording this, can you believe it? Your girl is actually recording podcast episodes earlier now. And so not the day before. At the time that I'm recording this, we're still securing the dates and locations. So if you go to that website and the waitlist is there, for those ladies who are on the waitlist, you will get first access not only to register and have doors open, but also the promotional pricing for being the first ones to register. And if you go to the website address and the doors are already open, you'll still have access to join and be the first ones to get the spot while spaces are available. So this will still be limited. We're not going to fill up an auditorium. We are going to make sure that there's more space for more women to attend, but I want to still be able to look at everyone in their eyes. I want to be able to be in connection with everyone. And even if I do decide to be able to break it down into, you know, we have our main lectures, but then we break out into smaller healing circles throughout, I still want to make sure that there's not so many circles that we still kind of get lost in the sauce. So blackgirlsheal.org/retreat for you to register or join the wait list and get more information. And I am so excited to meet y'all and see y'all next year, or to see alumni. I've had women who've come multiple years in a row because they've really enjoyed the experience. And so it is truly magical. And I look forward to hugging on y'all, crying with y'all, praying with y'all, talking about the stars with some of y'all, and just having a good time, just having a great time, especially if we get to have it in our second destination, which is going to be amazing if everything comes to pass. But either way, Houston is legit. I love Houston. So either way, we're going to have a great time. So that's it for now. I'm sending you all so much love, and I hope that you found support in this episode, and I hope you know how special and loved you are. Until next time, take care of yourselves.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.